Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring inspiring stories from great Americans who are making a difference. Your host is West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and founder of Authentically American, Dean Wegner.
Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wegner, and today I'm joined by my friend, a true American hero, former Attorney General of the United States and former counsel to the President, Alberto Gonzalez. From his modest roots in humble Texas to his rise to the highest-ranking Hispanic in the executive branch of the federal government, Judge Gonzalez has dedicated his life to serving our great nation. It was a real honor to sit with him today and hear stories about his childhood, his partnership with President George W. Bush, his leadership at the Belmont School of Law, and his lifelong love of baseball. You will not want to miss today's episode. Judge Gonzalez, thank you for joining us here on the Authentically American Podcast. It is truly an honor to be here with one of our American heroes and, you know, share with our audience a little bit more of your story.
I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Fantastic. You know, as we've been doing this series, Judge, since January, I'm always amazed at the stories and how a lot of them are shaped very early on in a lot of our guests' stories. So, you know, I saw that you grew up in Humble, Texas. Now, tell me a little bit about your upbringing.
Humble, Texas is a little community just north of Houston. Uh-huh. And my dad built a small two-bedroom house that I grew up in with seven siblings. And we were pretty poor. We didn't have hot running water the entire time I lived at home. We didn't have a telephone until I was a junior in high school. And you know, my dad had a second grade education. My mom had a sixth grade education. And he worked construction, and my mom stayed at home working at home raising eight children. So it was, you know, like I think like most children, we didn't know we were poor, and we enjoyed life, and we learned responsibilities at a very early age from my parents. And so it was a good upbringing, but looking back, I realize that from where I began to the things that I've been able to accomplish, it really is sort of the American story. From my perspective, it's God's grace. And it's just just another example of what makes this country so special.
Oh, yeah. I mean, truly an American dream story. And I've heard your upbringing described as a working-class family, and it puts a whole new perspective when you mm-hmm. talk about the lack of hot water and the environment conditions you grew up in. Mm-hmm. But go ahead.
I've traveled the country many times and have talked to many people, and there are so many stories like mine. And I remember one time I was speaking at an event where I was introducing Edward James Olmos, who was being recognized. He's the actor most people may remember him as a police officer in Miami Vice. And I spoke about my upbringing and introduced Mr. Olmos, and he came up and started talking about how he grew up in a house that had dirt floors, that had no wooden floors. So it was just a reminder that no matter where you start in life, you know, there are many great things you can accomplish if you apply yourself, get a good education. You meet the right people that serve as tremendous role models and mentors and help you to achieve.
Yeah. And amazing to reinforce your point. We do this podcast twice a month. It could be twice a day. And it's amazing just how many mm-hmm. great, amazing stories are out there that people are inspiring, making a difference, and really want to give back and serve our country.
Well, you know, that certainly was true for me. I was in private practice for 13 years, and I got restless, and George W. Bush came along, and he was elected governor of Texas in 1994, and I was offered a job to go work for him as his general counsel. Mm-hmm. And I thought this might be an opportunity to kind of give back, and I told my wife that I would only do it for 2 or 3 years. But when I got into that world, I realized how fulfilling it was, how challenging it was, and I felt like I was really making a difference. I really admired mm-hmm. and respected George W. Bush, and so I ended up being with him for about 13 years, working with him in various capacities, and it was really a privilege. And someone like, you know, he the opportunities that he gave me fundamentally changed the trajectory of my life. And I realize that, and I will always be grateful to him for that. And that's what happens for many people that are successful. They meet others who give them a chance. And I know that in the Hispanic community, the Hispanic culture, right, so many people who come from similar backgrounds, their prayer is, just give me a chance to prove myself. Just give me a chance to succeed. And that's sort of the, you know, that's the anthem, I think, for many people in this country that grew up from, you know, poor beginnings. It's a great country.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I know you guys, you know, built a friendship. You stood side by side by one of the most challenging times in our countries. But how did you guys first get introduced? You know, what was that first moment that you and George W. got introduced?
My wife tells me that we met in 1988 when George W. was campaigning for his father, who was running for president in 1988. I don't remember that meeting, but I do remember that in 1994, when he was running for governor of Texas, I was asked to set up an event for him in Houston. I was working at Vinson Elkins, the law firm, at the time. And I remember he came and spoke at the law firm, and I thought, what a great guy. But I really thought he had no chance of beating Ann Richards, who was then the incumbent governor of Texas. So we met then. We met one other time during the campaign, but I really didn't know him. And so I was surprised after he won the election. About a week later, he or someone on his team called one of my partners and asked, you know, would Al Gonzalez be interested in coming and being my general counsel? And I was surprised. About a week later, I went up to Austin and sat down with the governor, newly elected governor, and asked him at the end of our conversation, I have to ask you, why me? You don't know me. There are 70,000 lawyers in Texas. Why me? And he said, well, back in 88, when my dad was first elected president, he said, you interviewed for some positions in my dad's administration, which I did. I turned them down because I wanted to stay at my firm and make partner. Anyway, fast forward to Austin. So the newly elected governor says, you turned down my old man for a job. And so that's how you got on my radar screen. And I was amazed that he knew that and that he remembered that story. But it was a reflection the first time that I really encountered. And he's got a great memory for events and people. Oh. And that was an example of that. So we developed a good relationship. And I think part of that stems from the fact that, you know, even though he was a son of a president, I'm a son of a construction worker. We had a right mix of personalities. And I think he appreciated my story. And, you know, and I think, I consider him a good friend and feel privileged to have had the opportunity to work with him.
Yeah, and then you guys created quite a few amazing stories together on your journey.
We encountered some very challenging times. Obviously, no one could anticipate in 9/11, but the issues that arose from the attacks were tremendous and challenging, controversial. And, I readily admit, and I think he would as well, we didn't always get it right. So when I speak to the American people, and I think he says the same thing, that we didn't always get it right, but we tried to get it right. We did our best. And in the end, that's really all you can ask of someone is, did you do your best? And whatever actions you took, did you take them with the best of intentions? And if the answer is to that, yes, then, you know, I'm proud of my service. Obviously I would do some things differently, but as a general matter, very pleased with the opportunities and my service.
I don't even want to go down the political path, but it's just striking to compare today and the divisiveness back to then, just the tragedy and how united we are as a country and how we're going to have just tremendous resolve to go ahead and, you know, stand together.
But I think we see that occur throughout history after Pearl Harbor, for example. Mm-hmm. I mean, the country as a general matter comes together following the tragedy. But even after the passage of time, things became controversial during the Bush administration. So it's just very, very natural. And when people talk to me about, well, have you ever, you know, they ask me, have you ever seen it so bad, so polarized, so politicized? And I remind them, well, think about the Civil War. How polarized were we then? And you think about the 1968, I'm old enough to remember that, when you had protests over the Vietnam War, you had riots in the street, you had students being killed on college campuses, assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King. Those were tough times too. Mm-hmm. So our country has weathered tough times before, and I'm quite confident because of the institutions we have in place and the values that we all share that we're going to weather these times as well.
I'm absolutely with you there.
Okay.
So let's talk about the transition, because you served our country and served it well. And then you made the transition, ultimately, to where we're sitting right now in the Belmont School law office. So talk to me about that transition and how you wanted to get back and get an education, and specifically, why Nashville and Belmont?
Well, you know, it was, I think for any cabinet official, and particularly for someone who was the Attorney General, and of course White House counsel, and all the challenges that you have, leaving government, it was like going from 100 miles an hour to zero. It was a little jolting and startling. So it's kind of tough. You miss it because, and as I was told by Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, when I left, he said, you know, Al, you'll never have a job as challenging, as rewarding as the one you're leaving. And it was somewhat sad, but it's true. You go to Washington and you get all these privileges and you have this power and to do good and opportunities, and but it's not permanent. And that's part of the problem we have today. I think so many people want to hold on to power for longer than they should, but I think the way the framers intended is that you go, you serve, you learn your lessons, you come back to the community, and you impart that wisdom to others for the next generation of leaders. And I think that's very, very important. So for me, what I did is I transitioned into academia, which was natural for me because of the things that I've learned, and I wanted to kind of tell my story to students and tell them what I've learned and the mistakes that I've made and the decisions that I made and why I made those decisions. And so that was a natural transition for me. In terms of why I'm at Belmont and in Nashville, I'm a Texan. I love Texas. I'm going to be buried in the Texas State Cemetery when I die. But I came to Nashville because my son was looking at colleges here.
Okay.
And one of the places he looked was Belmont, and ultimately decided to come to school here. And when he decided to come to school here, I didn't know Belmont was starting a law school. About 2 weeks after the visit, I got an email from the founding dean asking, would I be interested in teaching here? And I really wasn't, because I'm a Texan. Didn't know that much about Nashville. Mm-hmm. The offer kept getting better. Then I got an offer to work at a law firm downtown. And so my wife and I decided, okay, we'll go to Nashville and just check it out for a while. But now I have two sons that have graduated from Belmont. Mm-hmm. My wife graduated from Belmont. So we're all in for Belmont.
I can tell. And, you know, talking about making a difference, because you were here in the formative stages when Belmont Law School was just developing.
Right.
As I was doing my homework, you know, love to see the mark of excellence now that you're putting on the school, because 2018, I read, U.S. News and World Report, you made that ranking for the first time, and 2019, you know, 94% was the number I saw.
I think 94% was last year. This year we were almost at 98% in terms of bar passage rate. Mm-hmm. And our employment rate for last year's class is around 96%. We are blessed to be in a community that is the site of state government, so there are government jobs. Mm-hmm. Obviously, music industry is huge here. The healthcare industry is huge here. Nashville is exploding. So our graduates have been very successful in getting jobs, and it stems in part from the fact that I think people are starting to respect the quality of our program, and that makes a big difference in encouraging employers to take a chance on our graduates.
So what's been your focus? What's really enabled that journey from, you know, program just starting now to, you know, beating out Vanderbilt, for example?
Well, it's pretty basic. Uh-huh. We have a very strong faculty who care very much about teaching. And, you know, we have such things as a strong attendance policy. We don't think you can learn if you're not actually in class.
Fundamentals,
yeah. Honestly. And we do flunk people out. We don't flunk many out because we are very careful in the selection of people that we admit to our program. But unfortunately, sometimes there are people that come to law school and they're just not willing to work. And they may have all the qualifications in the world, but for whatever reasons, distractions, whatever, that they just don't do the work. And so, you know, we flunk them out if we have to, and because we know that at the end of the day, when they take the bar, they're not going to be successful. Mm-hmm. We don't want to take people's money for 3 years knowing they're not going to be successful and pass the bar. Mm-hmm. So we have that kind of policy for a lot of schools around the country. They don't like to do that, and I understand that. But we feel that we have a responsibility to make sure that if you're going to pay good money to come to law school here, you're going to get a good education. You're going to pass a bar. You're going to be able to practice as a lawyer. We just think that's fundamental.
Yeah, I know you make it sound easy, and I know it's not that way. But you know, it's a tribute to you and the whole staff for what you've been able to accomplish.
Well, I appreciate that, but I think you identified that we've got a tremendous faculty and we have a tremendous staff. We work very, very hard at this. This is a and we are blessed to be affiliated with the university. It's very supportive. The university itself is growing and has developed a very strong reputation. So that's also very, very helpful. So I'd say it's all pretty positive with respect to Belmont, and hopefully anyone watching this this podcast that's interested in law school, that they'll at least give us a shot and learn a little bit more about Belmont.
Sure they will, the more they read about it.
Okay.
So what's the future look like for Belmont Law School? Because you've been on this trajectory. I mean, standards, excellence, everything continues to rise. So what's your vision for the next 5 and 10 years?
Well, I like to think that we have arrived and are sort of are viewed locally as Nashville's law school. Obviously, we have Vanderbilt in this community. Vanderbilt's been around a long, long time, and I'm not suggesting that we're near Vanderbilt or we'll ever be in competition with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt is more of a national school. We understand that, but that's okay. We have a niche here. We have an opportunity. We provide, I think, good lawyers for people that are looking for good lawyers here in Nashville. So we want to continue to promote that. And I think that's something that's important to President Bob Fisher and President of the University, and it's important to me. So we're interested in building on the quality, building on the reputation, and continue to produce the next generation of leaders, lawyers who understand that it's not just about going out and making money. It's also about providing service. It's also about sacrifice and getting involved in the community, getting involved in local, state, and federal government, if possible. We believe that's very important, and that's part of the obligation of being licensed as a lawyer.
Yeah. Let's transition, Judge, to one of your personal passions. And now you're a big sports guy. You enjoy teamwork, and that embodies itself in every role you've been. But I know baseball is a big passion of yours. So is that something that was part of your upbringing?
I played baseball when I growing up, Little League. I had the three brothers that were approximate age. I was the oldest, and we would always play 2-on-2 on the summer. Every morning we'd have 2-on-2 baseball games, and then my mom would make us take a nap, and then we'd have 2-on-2 baseball games in the afternoon. So in Little League I played in Pony League, and played in high school. And so I've always loved baseball, and currently involved in an effort to try to bring Major League Baseball to Nashville.
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to talk a little bit more about, because that's something that people would say, is it even possible? When you think of Nashville of old, it was a small city. People were surprised that we first of all had an NFL team, then we had an NHL franchise, and both have done extremely well, and now baseball.
Well, I think the success of the existing professional teams, and includes soccer recently, we've awarded a soccer franchise.
Yes.
It is an indication that Nashvillians do support their sports teams.
Mm-hmm.
And when we think about bringing baseball to Nashville, we're not talking about the population of Nashville today, but the population of Nashville in 2024. We wouldn't be able to field a baseball team before then if we were talking about expansion. Mm-hmm. So if you look at the projected growth of Nashville, I do believe that Nashville can support an additional professional franchise. Mm-hmm. There's a long history of baseball here in Nashville that people are unaware of, in terms of the minor leagues, the Negro leagues that played here. In fact, the name that we've selected, the Nashville Stars, is a sort of a tribute to the Negro Leagues teams that were called the Nashville Stars that once played here in Nashville. The name is also, though, a tribute, not surprisingly, to the musical stars that make Nashville their home, and the sports stars that live here as well. So. Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think people need to understand that this is going to be a long process. Mm-hmm. We're going to approach this in a methodical, professional manner. We're going to do the steps that have to be taken, but it's going to take some time. And there are no guarantees. There's no guarantee that Major League Baseball, the owners, will ever vote to award a franchise to Nashville. There's no guarantee that if they do, that they're going to award it a Major League franchise, that it'll be to Nashville, but maybe to another city. It may not be to the group that I'm working with currently. So there are a lot of unknowns here. We may not get the necessary support from the city, although the conversations that we've had today have been very general, as you might imagine, because there's a lot of detail that's still missing that we can't provide. But people have been generally open to the idea, the concept, if we can do the work. So I'm optimistic about it. Is it possible? Yes, it's possible. Will it be hard? Yes, it'll be very, very hard, and it's going to take some time. But this effort's about building support, and about building awareness about what we're doing. So these kind of interviews, discussions, I think is all part of that effort.
It's created a lot of buzz here in Nashville, which is exciting.
That's fine, but so long as it's tempered with reality, I think it's also very important.
Don't put my down payment on season tickets yet?
Exactly. As I said, I'm optimistic about it, and obviously I wouldn't be spending my time on it. And the university is well aware of what I'm doing, and they believe this is good for Belmont. It's good for the community, and Belmont, one of its mission, we believe in community service. It's one of the pillars of what we believe in, what we stand for, and what we try to strive for. And so they've been supportive of my efforts, and it takes a little bit of time of what I do here at the law school, but it's something that that I enjoy.
Oh, absolutely. And just to reinforce, my family and I enjoy going to the Sounds games. So the town has really embraced Nashville, and we've got a great following there with our local team.
Absolutely. The Nashville Sounds have been, a great community partner. And they've done wonderful things with that franchise. It has been very successful. One of the questions I'm often asked, well, what's going to happen to the Sounds? We'll be doing a very detailed feasibility study at the beginning of next year, and we're going to evaluate, can a city the size of what Nashville will be in 2024 support both a major league franchise and a AAA franchise? We'll have to evaluate that.
What, 100 people a day, which is the average moving here?
That's a lot of people coming. Hopefully most of them are baseball fans.
That's right. Well, Al, I got to have a little fun with your education.
Okay.
Because me being a West Point grad, I know you've had an amazing education with Rice and your law degree from Harvard, but Air Force Academy? You spent some time there? Me being a West Point grad.
Well, on this table here is a hat from West Point that was given to me when I spoke there. I've spoken at all four service academies, and let me just say, first of all, that I come away with such great hope for our country when I talk to those students, and I see those students and their dedication and their vision for the future, and I think, okay, we're going to be okay. These are just the top in terms of students. But yes, I wanted to be a pilot. In fact, when I graduated from high school, I enlisted in the regular Air Force.
Okay.
I got stationed at Fort Yukon, Alaska. It was my first duty assignment, and I met two Air Force Academy graduates who encouraged me to try to get an appointment to the Air Force Academy. Now, if I had met two West Pointers, I'm sure would have encouraged me. No, you got to go to West Point. Mm-hmm. So they encouraged me to get an appointment, and I got the appointment. And I would have been in the 1979 class, the last all male class of all the service academies. But I wanted to be a pilot. But my eyes betrayed me. And so after 2 years, I left and transferred to Rice University, which I chose Rice because as a boy, I used to sell soft drinks, carry these trays of Cokes and Sprites up and down the stadium during Rice football games. And that was really the only school I really thought about applying to, and I got accepted. But I've always wondered what my life would have been like if I had graduated from the Air Force Academy. Still today, I get invitations to all the reunions, even though I didn't graduate.
Always have fun with the rivalries because that Army, Navy, Air Force, it's always a good rivalry.
But West Point is a tremendous school. The location is beautiful. Although I've never been there in the winter, only I've been there in the summers and in the fall. But you should be proud of it to be at West Point. That's a great education.
And I served for 7 years, graduated West Point in 93, went to flight school, Ranger School, got out in 2000. So 7 years, and I don't serve now, but I'm with you. I'm inspired when we get involved because we now at Authentically American are an official licensee for all the service academies, and that gives me an opportunity to stay in touch. And you just look at the quality of graduates that they have and then the incoming applicants. It gives great and hope inspiration for our future.
Absolutely. I'm with you.
Okay. So I did have one more question I'd like to ask our guests. And we're a new startup business with Authentically American. And I always like to ask our guests, what does it mean to you, Judge, to be authentically American?
Well, I think, we are the greatest country on the face of the earth. And I think that too often Americans forget that, how special, how unique our country is. As Attorney General, I had the opportunity to visit many, many countries. And there are many wonderful things beyond our shores, many beautiful things. And with no offense to any country, particularly those that are allies, those democracies that exist overseas, I think without a doubt, we are the beacon of hope and opportunity. And when people get in trouble, other countries face crises and threats, they turn to the United States. Mm-hmm. I happen to believe that we as a country have an obligation to be involved in events around the world. Yeah. I think we're expected to lead. And I think that when we're not involved, we get outcomes in other parts of the world that are not good for us. Down the road, they're not good for us. So, you know, I have great pride in being an American. Not arrogance, but just pride. And I would expect anyone from another country to have pride in their own country. But yeah, to be authentically American is what a wonderful thing, huh? Absolutely. Just to be an American.
Yeah, because I tell everybody the ethos of Authentically American, the first one, you know, we're a brand that celebrates patriotism. Mm-hmm. Love our country, love the values and everything we stand for, not to say that we're perfect, but we believe in our country, which also means we believe in the American worker, which mm-hmm. is why everything we do, mm-hmm. no exceptions, is made in USA. Mm-hmm. And then I love to see all the military coins back here. You know, I've got not quite as large a collection, but...
You see the collection at home. Oh. This is... I love the coins, but it just a symbol of service and a symbol of what a great country we live in today.
Well, I'm appreciative of your time, and I do have, you know, two gifts for you.
Okay, wow.
And it's been an honor, Judge, to be here with you and share your story. And it's, I remember last time when you walked me around the office, and it was just a reminder of the impact you've had and how you've served our country so well. But two gifts. So one, it's ironic that you're not wearing a tie.
Okay.
Because I tell everybody that socks are the new ties. So
what? You know, socks are the new ties?
Are you into socks and have some fun fashion with socks?
Yeah, so I love those socks.
These are going to be your new favorite pair. So these are authentically American, which means they're made in USA. They've got a fun, patriotic design. So these are Carolina cotton, knit in Carolina. And they're also made in Carolina, so not only do they have a fun, patriotic design, but when you wear them for the first time, you should be able to pull them up in the beginning of the day and not have to throughout the day. They don't fall, they don't sag down.
I'm sure those are great. Thank you.
That's one. And then the other one, Judge, that I have is, you know, back to the little jest I had with Army, Navy, and Air Force. So we want Authentically American not only to be synonymous with Made in USA, but a high-quality premium product, and part of that is bringing innovation. So I was going to show you something that we just have that's been a huge hit. Have you ever heard of sweat-activated printing, what we call our sweat ink?
No.
I'll show you this, if you don't mind just holding that sleeve over there.
Holding the sleeve.
So this is Army, this could be the Air Force, this could be the Harvard, any called symbol, but we're going to cheat, so we're not going to work out, but this is moisture sweat-activated. So when you start to work out, you can see the Go Army start to appear, and we tested this with a Go Army Beat Navy version. And it was amazing, the impact. So
will it be all over the shirt or just
it
that
goes
area?
On the front there, and then
in
we've
the
got, you know, a different one on the back. So we stayed away from the Beat Navy for you. We just stuck with the Beat 'em.
That's great.
You know, it's been phenomenal, the impact on this.
Wow.
And I should have shared that we're now an official licensee now for Belmont. So we're working with the bookstore, so there may be a Belmont version coming in here very soon.
Okay, congratulations.
Well, thank you. We're excited and to partner with you and partner with the university here. So
excellent.
Next time
thank
you're
you.
Exercising or on a brisk walk around the neighborhood,
okay.
You can sport your new favorite Army t-shirt.
Look, thank
well, Judge,
you.
It sure was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You've been listening to the Authentically American podcast. You can follow Authentically American on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and find all our episodes at authenticallyamerican.us/podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you for listening.